It's time for our semi-regular conversation about politics with our commentators, E.J. Dionne, a columnist for The Washington Post, and David Brooks, a columnist for The New York Times. I guess it's natural for us to begin with a discussion about steel, since we're expecting a decision from the White House as early as this week and whether they will plan to rescind those tariffs on steel imports. And we had the sort of interesting scenario yesterday with the president standing shoulder to shoulder with the CEO of U.S. Steel. I imagine that's the kind of thing that gives folks at the White House a bit of heartburn.
Well, there'll probably be a return to principle on this issue. This was supposed to be a free trade administration. They went against their principle in the most naked and almost corrupt way in putting on these steel tariffs, which was supposed to win support in Pennsylvania and West Virginia. And lo and behold, they found that the principle actually had some politics behind it, because there were all these steel users in Michigan and some other swing states who were furious. And so after about a year or two, I think they've finally come back and decided, hey, free trade actually politically and economically makes some sense.
It is curious, though, that we learned that the White House is on the verge of making this decision in the same week that the president is visiting all these manufacturing states, EJ.
Well, it was funny in Pittsburgh, where he came, got the money from the fundraiser, left, and may have picked their pockets on the way to reversing a decision that had helped the steel industry. But David is right that the problem with these decisions, which really didn't seem principled at all, is that he was looking at first at a bunch of states, notably Pennsylvania and West Virginia, and said, if I put on the steel tariffs, that'll help me there. But then not only did you have steel-using states, parts of Ohio, Michigan, but also the threat of retaliation from the EU, which would hurt the orange industry in guess which state? Florida. And so I think there is a problem when you calculate policy too much by politics. You tie yourself into political knots, and I think Bush is now trying to untie that knot.
And as he unties that knot, what kind of political risk does he face?
Well, I think it's now going to hurt him even more in states like Pennsylvania and West Virginia, because first he gave and then he took away. But I think there's a bigger debate to be had here, which is over the extent to which this administration has really engaged in a kind of politics of payoff to a whole series of industries. If you looked at the Medicare drug bill, for example, a lot of that bill was, the core was to help seniors buy drugs, but so much of it was to benefit the pharmaceutical companies, to benefit the HMOs. And I'm very curious if you begin to see in the campaign an acknowledgement of the ways in which the administration has chosen to align its interests with corporate interests in the country.
Well, David, that's interesting, because you haven't really heard that on the campaign trail from the Democrats. They aren't connecting the dots at this point.
Well, they're attacking Bush as a tool of corporate interest, that's for sure. And to me, one of the most amazing stories of the past few years is how little the Bush administration has paid for affiliation with Enron. There was an early poll after the Enron scandal broke in which people were asked, which party do you trust to handle corporate corruption? Republicans had an advantage by 7 points. We've had these corporate scandals, we've had mutual fund scandals, and yet people have not taken it out on the Republicans. I think that's in part because of some deft management of the issue by the White House, in part because people see it as a law and order issue, and in part because I suspect people see Bush as a leader who's willing to take strong action against somebody. And so they congregate toward him in times of scandal.
You know, I think Americans have a very nuanced view of corporations. And I think the issue is, where is the balance at any given time? Is there a tipping point where so much is being done for corporations? And even Americans who say, yes, my livelihood depends on this, also say, but this administration tilts too much in that direction. I think where the bite may come, oddly enough, is on the budget deficit. When you heard the debate over the energy bill, fiscally conservative Republicans such as John McCain made the most powerful anti-corporate speeches, saying this is tilting the whole playing field in favor of a certain set of interests. This isn't capitalism at all. It's a kind of corporate. And I think so that if the budget deficit goes up, it's tied to helping certain interests that happen to be sympathetic with the president. I think that may give the issue bite.
Well, you know, one might really be confused if you were watching this year's Congress, because it appears that Republicans have shelved their reputation for fiscal restraint. EJ, you noted in one of your columns recently that spending per person is higher under the Bush administration than it was during the years that Bill Clinton was in the White House.
Right. And in fact, there was a report that came out from the Democrats in the House about sort of pork barrel earmarks, special projects that go to particular districts. Those are way up under the Republicans. So if you're pushing taxes down a lot and just letting the spending run, you get these big deficits. And I think you may see a shift in public sentiment over time saying, wait a minute, maybe political conservatives aren't fiscal conservatives anymore.
Yeah, I don't think you'll see a shift. It's an iron rule of politics that if you want to increase domestic spending, you vote for Republicans. And if you want to decrease it or limit it, you vote for Democrats, because Republicans have the reputation of being fiscally austere, so they want to prove they're compassionate. So, for example, George Bush has increased spending on the Department of Education, I think, by 65%, spending for unemployed insurance by 85%. So what Republicans do in the Reagan administration, in the first Bush administration, in the second Bush administration, spend a lot more on domestic welfare programs to increase their reputation as compassionate.
And here's where I think David may be wrong, and that's in the coming year, which is the president is hearing all this talk about his being fiscally irresponsible. And I think he's going to pick out a few programs, probably programs for the poor, target them and say, you've got to hold spending down on this, and hope that the Democrats say, you know, that's outrageous, you're cutting those programs for the poor. It won't make a big difference in the deficit. But I think it's going to be his effort to reposition himself in the fight.
There's a development that I just feel like we can't close without getting to, and that is the question of the ship in New York City, the idea that the Republicans would visit New York City adjacent, that they would spend time on this cruise ship. I mean, the whole idea of bringing a convention to a big city is that you're going to pump a lot of money into that city, and some of that may trickle down to the voters who might cast votes for you down the line.
Well, Tom DeLay had a very innovative idea here. We've heard of gated communities, but he was about to turn Republicans and all their lobbyist friends into a moated community. It would be out there in the river away from this terrible Democratic city. I think the great thing is Republicans themselves said, wait a minute, we want to go to New York. We want to visit New York. Republicans in New York obviously said, we want Republicans spending money on our people, on our businesses. And so DeLay just backed down immediately, something Tom DeLay almost never does. His spokesman said, look, Tom DeLay cares about a lot of issues. He doesn't really care about this one.
Yeah, and the beauty of the Republican convention in New York is the tremendous culture clash we'll get there as the hordes of creationists descend on the Upper West Side. And maybe the sides will actually learn off each other. It'll be the greatest meeting of East and West since Marco Polo went to China.
And on that point, I think we have to close. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David Brooks is a columnist for the New York Times, and E.J. Dionne is a columnist for the Washington Post and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.